This is absolutely one of those beautiful solemnities that reminds us of a very simple truth. It is, in so many ways, reminding us of something so very important. And that is that God never forgets his faithful servants. If you think about it, if Jesus was just another prophet or just another guy, the question has to be asked, why do we know his mother so well? Who was David's mother? Yeah, I don't know either. How about Abraham? His mom? I mean, I know Solomon's mother because Solomon's brother was born in sin. If you think about it, there's something incredibly, remarkably profound about the impact of who Christ is, how important he is, and how important his mother is as a result. And I think it's truly incredible that we get to celebrate this beautiful solemnity that reminds us of that simple truth that God does not forget his faithful ones. Because here it is, at the end of Mary's life, after she's fulfilled her responsibility, after she has ensured she has brought forth the Savior of the world, she is not forgotten. Rather, they celebrate the Dormition of Mary. In the 4th century, they refer to it as the Dormition of Mary, the falling asleep. That's what Dormition is, the falling asleep of Mary. And contained therein is this incredible reality that God took her, body and soul, into heaven. It was her assumption. She was assumed into heaven. We don't assume she's somewhere else. Assumption has to do with the other verb, and Mary was assumed into heaven. It really is striking. If you think about it, all of the other apostles, they know where they are. They know where they're buried. We have first-class relics, that is, parts of the body of those saints, of each of the apostles. One of them went to India. That's no mean feat that they know where he's buried. I mean, there was an earthquake, and now they can't find the body, but, you know, when the earth opens up, lots of things disappear, so that's not even confusing. But, you know, there are no first-class relics of Mary. Second-class, I'm told there are a few, but no first-class. Body's gone. God took her. Everything points to it. This isn't just some wild speculation, but it truly points to this incredible and profound reality. And don't let anyone tell you that heaven is just a state of mind, because if heaven was just a state of mind, where are the bodies of Jesus and Mary? It has to be a place. It has to have some tangible reality because there are tangible bodies there. It is truly an incredible experience to be able to celebrate this beautiful celebrity. It actually has a very important place for me. I mean, this is a particularly important story for me. It was on August the 15th that I was reminded myself that God does not forget his faithful ones. In 2008, I was about 6 years done with my seminary education. I had 2 years to go. It's no mean feat to pull off 8 years of seminary, but I was working on it. And it was 2008, and in the summer, I had just survived a particularly rough year. I actually didn't like it so much. They'd made a few changes in the school and a few policy changes, and through an unfortunate series of circumstances, classes were a problem for so many reasons. And there was a program that I was supposed to be enrolled for that the diocese says I wasn't and the school says I was, and it was a big fight. And I wanted to quit. It was awful. And even as I stand here and tell you that it was awful, that seems to minimize so much just how bad I really thought it was. I had grown an ulcer on my stomach, and I really felt terrible. I wanted to quit. It was just a nightmare. And over the summer, I didn't do the program the school wanted. I did what the diocese wanted, because trust me, you always go with the one that's going to sign your paycheck and make sure that you have the back of the diocese. Remember, I'm leaving the school at some point. I'm never leaving the diocese, so you got to make sure that you know where your investment lies. And it had been decided that I was going to transfer schools because of the fighting that had occurred. And it really was a fight between the bishop and the diocese, and I didn't really want to change schools. I really wasn't looking forward to it, but I didn't see any other option. I was doing as I was told, and I really felt that if this is what God was calling me to do, then that's what I had to do. And it was very frustrating, because at the time it had made clear that I had to take an additional year in order to do so. So now instead of the class of 2010, I'd become the class of 2011. And 1 year may not sound like much, but when you're on year six of an eight-year program, 1 year might as well sound like the rest of our lives. And it just was not something I was looking forward to. And I had to start an additional degree program, and the requirements were different, and everything was going to change. And I was going to have to be further from home, and I really felt like I had been forgotten. And I went to the podiatrist's office because I had damaged my toe, because that's what happens when you smash the heck out of your foot. And long story short, I almost died in the podiatrist's office that morning. So I was on my sister's couch late in the afternoon praying that the day would end. It was a Thursday, and on Saturday I was supposed to move to my new school, and it was all going to happen, and it was all in place, and that was it. It was just going to be that way. And I had almost died in the podiatrist's office that morning, and I was just happy to pretend that the day didn't happen. Just try and sleep it away. And I received a phone call from the newly appointed director of vocations. He had been the director of vocations for all of, I think, 2 weeks by that point. And he called and he said, if you could go back to your first school, would you? And I had had some weird dreams that day. There was an elephant floating above my head. You know, there were things I wasn't really sure about, and I wasn't sure this phone call was really happening, so I hung up the phone. Because I didn't really think it was there. And he called me right back. He blamed it on bad reception. I'm glad he was willing to blame it on bad cell reception so we could move past that little feature there. And he asked again, you could go back, would you? And I didn't see how going back was actually going to change anything. The problems were still there. The problems were still existing. And it just wasn't going to be resolved. There was no good way out. And I just had no choice about this. And I said to my vocation director, I said, I don't know. And he said, well, the bishop would like to see you, so you have to come in tomorrow, the day before you leave. And I thought, sure, why not? I'm sure I got lots of free time. And I went to see the bishop that day, and I came into his office, and I still remember when I first joined the diocese, they weren't at the administration building on 555 Coleman Center Drive. They were still across the street from the cathedral, so I had never been in the bishop's office at this location. And I came into this office, and he had just welcomed new seminarians into the diocese, and I didn't have the heart to tell them to get out while they still could, because, you know, I wanted someone to have hope. And I came into the office, and he apologized to me because of all the things that had happened. And I had never had a bishop apologize to me. I'm just a seminarian. They're not much, you know. And it was on this day, the 15th of August, in 2008, when God reminded even me that God does not forget his faithful ones. We are not forgotten. We're not even overlooked. At times we do suffer. At times we might feel like God is just focused on other things. But we should never underestimate that in the end, God's still in charge. And he holds each and every one of us carefully in the palm of his hand, beloved and not forgotten.